down! Hut, 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 hut!
All Packers, all the time.
He was a field-tilting player, and the reason why Gabe and many others are so concerned is that this guy's on the field, he changes the offensive dynamic. They are a different offense when he is there.
Okay, most of the time.
You know, Homer calls Matt LaFleur soft all the time. Matt LaFleur is like Vince Lombardi compared to me.
It's Jason Wilde on Jen, Gabe, and Chewy.
We always appreciate Jason Wilde taking time out of his busy day to chat with us knuckleheads here on Jen, Gabe, and Chewy. Good morning. How are you doing today, Jason?
You are my favorite knuckleheads, and of course I take time out of my busy day for you. I work here.
Well, yes, exactly. You're like, I'm contractually obligated to. Let's talk about those Green Bay Packers. I know a lot of people are talking about and asking about the Jordan Love thing, but I want to pivot off of that very quickly. What are the big stories that you have seen popping from Packers training camp in the first few days that are not related to Jordan Love holding in?
Before we do that, are a lot of people talking about the Jordan Love situation?
Yeah, they are.
Here's the thing.
Okay, let me just give you a couple of examples. I'm at my kid's baseball game the other day. All the parents are talking about Jordan Love. I mean, varying opinions, right? Like, it's selfish to hold out. He's got to do it. This is when he has leverage. The difference between $11 million and $50 million. Vinny Vitrano, I did 620 this morning over our friends over on WTMJ. He's panicking. 3 days in, he's panicking. So I do think that there is a very strong interest from the fan base.
Wow. I talked to Vinny and Eric the previous 2 days and tried to calm them down. So it's good to see that my attempts to do so worked. Because I think I'm kind of, you know, and this happens every year during training camp, because I fail to see kind of the forest for the trees. And so I'm thinking, like you just asked, I'm thinking about the other storylines now. Like, we've covered Jordan Love. He didn't get a contract done before the start of camp. He is there. He's getting soaked standing as a spectator during that rainstorm the other day. He's there watching yesterday. We're watching Sean Clifford, who threw a couple of picks again yesterday. But for me, like, the way my brain works, it's, all right, we've covered the Jordan Love thing. There's really not anything new there. So until there is, there's a lot of other stories going on. And so it's interesting that folks are either panicking or staying calm. But for me, there's been a bunch, right? Like, there was, you know, the other day, Rashawn Gary had a 4-play stretch where he had 3 sacks and he was absolutely dominant. Now, whether or not that translates when they're in pads and whether or not that translates into him having a double-digit sack season, which he has never had for a guy that a lot of people like to talk about as an elite-level pass rusher, we'll have to wait and see on that. I thought it was really interesting yesterday that as Zach Tom remains sidelined, he's doing individual drills, but not 11-on-11. They're starting right tackle. Things were bad enough on the first 2 days with Andre Dillard that they replaced him with a guy named Kadeem Telfert, who I would challenge Packers fans who did not read my story today or read other beat writers' stories to tell me who the hell he is, frankly, which tells you maybe a little bit about where their depth is at on the offensive line if real injuries were to strike during the course of the season. Yesterday, Eric Stokes had a couple of interceptions. Here's a guy who didn't get the fifth-year option, really is in a huge prove-it year. But again, at least through 3 practices, he is ahead of Carrington Valentine, who he is supposed to be competing with for that starting job. And he's had some really good moments. He also got beat on a critical 3rd and 4, and he also had a bad pass interference penalty. So Eric Stokes is kind of being Eric Stokes right about now. So I'm watching a lot of other things. So it is instructive for me to know that even though Jordan Love is not out of sight, out of mind, because he's at practice, but out of practicing, out of mind for me, that's interesting that he's still very much the topic of conversation. I'll be very honest. The only thought that I have about him is when do we legitimately start saying, okay, this has become a problem? And I've kind of circled if it's not done in time for family night. But, you know, Adam Schefter had said earlier this week that it could be done by the end of the week. They've got the day off today. They practice tomorrow, and then Saturday is the first practice in pads. So I feel like we're kind of in a window where maybe something will get done.
Jason, is Russ Ball not a very good cap guy? I mean, if you look back to Rodgers' deal, that was not a good deal. It was good for Aaron Rodgers, and the only reason they got bailed out is because Jordan Love, we think, turned into a franchise quarterback, and Goody nailed the draft last year with the young guys. Now you go to Love here. He screwed up. Flat out screwed up.
Who did?
Russ Ball. Russ Ball.
How
did.
So?
Because this is going to cost them a boatload more than they thought it would. And if Dak somehow signs, like Diana said, that they're working hard to get that deal done, and that's 60 or north of 60, Love's going to get 58, where if they signed him before Goff signs his deal, they get him cheaper. So did he screw up
so
here?
Here's the problem, too. And again, I have railed against this structure. Mark Murphy still walks the other way whenever I am nearby, ever since I asked him in that press conference about what makes him qualified to be making the coaching hire, and why was it the right decision to offer Goody the job of GM but tell him that he wouldn't oversee the football operation. So, look, I don't have ideal clarity on how they function, but I think we can safely say that in retrospect, had they known he was going to play at the level he did, they would have just given him the fifth-year option for this year way back in May of 2023. But Goody, and I always go back to that quote, Gabe knows it by heart by now, it's a lot of money to give a guy who hasn't played. And I think that is so important because it underscores the fact that these guys – They can, if they want to, they can be revisionist historians and claim they knew all along that Jordan Love was going to be good, which he's good. Again, I'm not saying that he's going to revert to first half of last season form, but I'm not ready to be crowning him like some other folks have been. I think he's going to be a very good player. But a year ago, they had no idea. And that put them in the pickle that they're in now, because at least then they could have negotiated, like with Rodgers, who came before the fifth-year option era, they could have negotiated an extension with him down the stretch of last season and gotten him for pennies on the dollar compared to what they're going to pay now, right?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if his agents would have gone for that or not, but they at least could have had the ability to negotiate. And by doing what they did, that wasn't an option. But the Rodgers contract and then not giving him the fifth-year option are concrete evidence that the brain trust of the Green Bay Packers did not know if Jordan Love was going to be worth a damn or not. Because you don't give Rodgers $50 million a year if you're confident that Jordan Love's going to be good. And you don't do the fifth-year option alternative if you're confident that he's going to be good. So part of this is circumstantial. Now, the idea of getting the job done, you know, getting the deal done earlier before Goff, before Trevor Lawrence, whatever else, that I would love to have a conversation with people in the building about, because I think that their penny-pinching ways with contracts has come back to bite them, and that's watching the price tag go up and up and up. That point I totally agree with. But again, is that Russ Ball alone? Is that the Packers' philosophy as a whole? I mean, you know, a couple of weeks ago, Davante Adams is on Keyshawn Johnson's podcast and says that their opening offer was $17 million, and he hung up on them. Right? He pantomimed the click of hanging up the phone even though I don't think he probably was using like an old school rotary phone when they called. And my point is that they love to start low. Balaga said it yesterday when we were, 2 days ago when we were talking, and he's filling in for Tausch. Like, he signed in 2015. He made it to the verge of being on the market, like to the point where they didn't have the legalized tampering period, but Tom Condon was getting offers from other teams, and he ended up taking less to stay in Green Bay. But he said, you should have seen the first offer they made. Like, they start like me on eBay. Like, if a guy's selling something for $24.99, I'm offering him $10, and then he's going to be pissed at me. Like, that, you can't. That's how they operate. And so that's, if you start there, and now you have to get to where these contracts are headed at quarterback, that slows down the process. So I don't know if, I think your point is a good one, Chu. I just don't know if I can say that that's reflective of Russ or that's reflective of their brain trust's approach overall to contract negotiation.
Jason, I want to go back to Rashawn Gary, because I did hear you talking about him on your show yesterday about the day he had a couple of days ago and how explosive he looked.
Thanks for listening.
At what point do I get excited about Rashawn Gary? Because, yeah, 3 sacks and 4 plays, that's great in helmets and shorts. And I know he can get sacks quickly. He had 2 3-sack games last year. It's a consistency issue with him. And he is a player that you are paying to be an A guy. And he has not been an A guy for you. So I look at this as being a huge season for Rashawn Gary if this Packers defense wants to be as good as they want to be.
Gabe,
yes.
What the hell do you want me to say? You nailed it. This is why you're a national guy. You're so good, buddy. It's like, I remember Holmgren once, there was a TV guy who, and look, I have asked questions throughout my career that should have been made fun of, and some of them that were. But he asked this really even longer winded than a Wildy question, and he gets to the end, and Holmgren says to him, Dave, you just asked me 3 questions, and you answered 2 of them yourself. What do you want me to do?
Answer the third one.
Seriously. Yeah, that was what I thought sitting in the auditorium. Look, you summed him up perfectly, Gabe. I mean, absolutely perfectly. Like, 3 sacks in a 4-play span against Andre Dillard, which is what got Kadeem Telfert onto the field yesterday. I think 2 were against Dillard and 1 was against Rashid Walker. But here's how I would put that in perspective for now, following up on your very accurate description. I mean, the dude had 9 sacks last year, and 6 of them came in 2 games alone.
Mm-hmm.
I think the last 5 regular season games, he did not have a sack.
Correct.
Which I understand that's not the only way to measure quarterback pressure, but it is a way and a really important way.
Well, so, Jason, because I hear that, and I hear Tausch and all these people that want to defend Rashawn Gary with that. To me, it's like an offense that gets in the red zone but doesn't punch the ball into the end zone. Like, yeah, quarterback pressures are important. Getting to the red zone is important. But the most important thing is being able to get home, because the elite teams score touchdowns and the elite pass rushers get home and don't just get pressures. They have enough whatever to bring down the quarterback.
Yeah, trust me, I am aware of the people that are frustrated with him, because I tried to be funny about that sequence on Twitter, which, I, as you guys know, I hardly ever tweet anymore. And I said, if Rashawn Gary plays this season like he did in this practice, he's going to break the single-season sack record. Oh, my God. He's invisible for most of the games. He's this season. Yeah, I get it. I work here. I understand. I've seen him. I do give him a pass on last season, because I have always believed, even with all the advancements in post-ACL care and surgery and recovery and everything else, I still subscribe to the philosophy that first year back, you're not yourself. You're able to play, but you're not yourself. So I gave him some measure of a pass last season for his inconsistency. Now, that said, you gave him $84 million. He needs to be TJ Watt. He needs to be a Bosa. He needs to be a guy who tilts the field in your favor. And now there ain't no ACL explanation. He has to be that guy. And I do think, and again, This is the problem with practice. First of all, they're not in pads. That happens Saturday. Second of all, Andre Dillard was available when Zach Tom ruptured his pectoral muscle for a reason, because he has not lived up to his first round draft grade. But there, it could be that their offensive line is really struggling early on here in camp to kind of get its bearings. But I do think that watching this scheme and talking to guys in that locker room, that there is a chance that this group, whether it's Gary, whether it's Lucas Van Ness, whether it's Kenny Clark and Devontae Wyatt, I think there is a chance that this could fit them really well and they could be a higher pressure team because they really are in a much more attacking mode than the, all right, read the play, figure out which gap I need to fill, and then if it's a pass, then getting up the field. Like, I think that there's a chance that this could be transformative for that group and for Rashawn Gary. Now, I don't think Rashawn Gary is a very good run defender, and I'm very curious to see with all this aggressiveness, because that's all we keep hearing, how dangerous that becomes for them as a run defense. But the bottom line is, everything you said about Rashawn Gary is accurate and fair, and he has to prove to you and many, many others that he is going to be a consistent field-tilting, as Ron Wolf would call them, player, because he has been that in spurts, but definitely not consistently enough.
Jason, good stuff from you today. We appreciate you hanging out with us. We'll talk to you again soon.
I'll talk to you tomorrow, guys. Take care. Be good.
Listen to Jason Wilde on Wilde and Tausch right after Jen, Gabe, and Chewy. It comes to you from 9 to noon right here on 94.5 ESPN Milwaukee. All right, we got to take a break. I want to get to Christian Yelich dealing with some back issues that have put him on the IL. What does that mean for the Brewers' future and their success this season? We will break it all down next.
Guys, I'm telling you, if you're making plans to propose to that special someone in your life, the Jewelry Center, of course, is the only place to go for that ring. They're the best place to shop in Milwaukee for diamond engagement rings for a reason. It's where I went. It's where you should be going as well, because the helpful staff is always going to be able to point you in the right direction. If you have an idea, you can just go in, take a look at the great selection that they have. If you're not quite sure what you're looking for, maybe take a look at our Pinterest page. Kind of come up with some different ideas, and the helpful team at the Jewelry Center always pointing you in the right directions, and you're going to have options, whether we're talking about naturally mined diamonds, lab-grown diamonds, whatever you're in the market for when it comes to that engagement ring, the Jewelry Center has it. Check out their inventory at any one of their three locations, Greenfield, Brookfield, or in Burlington, or check out the Jewelry Center online. Shop TJC.com.